Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rates and Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rates and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. Be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. And the Rates and Lanes podcast ride again. We have with us again tonight, good friend of the show, Mr. Mike Lampel will be joining us again. And we're going to jump into this evening's show as we normally do, going off of the DAT Trendlines report. And we are currently showing that the national average price of diesel fuel is slowly creeping up still. Average diesel fuel price is at $3.34 a gallon. Freight rates rise as Hurricane Ida disrupts market. So we have the national spot market rates, van, reefer, and flatbed. Load-to-truck ratios fall, but prices increase heading into the holiday weekend. So from last week till now, load posts declined last week as many shipments were canceled or delayed due to Hurricane Ida, but the disruption pushes prices upward for each trailer type. The monthly national average spot rates for vans and reefers once again set new records in August at $2.75 per mile and $3.14 per mile, respectively. So with that being said, let's jump into each segment type and see how they were actually performing, starting off with the dry van spot market rate over the past week, starting out in the northeastern corridor. We have the national spot market outbound average price at $2.50 for dry vans. Coming down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we have an average outbound rate of $2.73. Coming up into the Midwest, we have the average spot market rate coming in at $2.96. That leads the nation. Dropping down to the south central region, we have the average spot market rate sitting at $2.55. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, for dry vans, we have the average spot market rate checking in at $2.89. Switching gears, jumping over to the flatbed portion of the report. Starting out up in the northeastern portion of the United States, if I can get my technology to cooperate with me, starting out northeast, we're showing $2.87 on the outbound side. Moving down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern states, we have an average outbound rate of $3.24. Climbing back up, and that $3.24 leads the nation for flatbeds. Climbing back up into the Midwest, we have an average outbound rate for flatbeds at $3.23. Coming out of the south central region, we have an average rate of $3.07 for flatbeds. And rounding out the west coast comes in at $2.68. Shifting gears, jumping over to the reefer or temperature control portion of the report. Starting out up in that northeast pocket, we have outbound rate at $2.78. Dropping down to the mid-Atlantic and southeastern, we have average outbound rate at $2.81. Coming out of the Midwest, leading the nation, a very strong $3.47 per mile coming out of there. Dropping down to the south central region, we have an outbound spot market rate for reefers at $2.96, and wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, bringing up just coming in second place at $3.33 average spot market rate coming out of the West Coast for the reefer portion of the report. And with that being said, let me grab my co-host as we merge onto the highway right here, Mr. Chuck Snow. Good evening, Chuck. How are you?
We're good, Rico. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well, Chuck. I really can't complain. Went to go see my favorite college football team over the past weekend, you know, a little birthday weekend getaway, and things didn't necessarily come out the way that I wanted them to go for my team, but we had an absolute great time.
Oh, that's great. You know what? That's what it's all about. Your team can't always win, because that would get boring pretty quickly.
No, I kind of like winning, children.
I like winning, too. But, you know, sometimes you got to let the other guy win a little bit or he won't play with you. Well, you know what, Rico? I'm really excited to have Mike Lampel on. It's been a while since he was on. And he's got such great insight. And everything he says usually comes to fruition. So I can't wait to hear what he has to say tonight. So with no further ado, Michael, come on. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sportsman is? Welcome, Mike, in. Good evening.
Hey, Rico. Do you know what a good sportsman is?
No.
A loser of practice.
Rico. Well said, well said.
So that's what I tell you, buddies. A good sportsman is a loser with practice.
Well put. So how is your world treating you, Michael?
Well, you know what I was saying? They're shooting, I'm ducking. And sometimes not ducking fast enough. But then I live in Canada, man. It's like the only thing we complain about is the weather and gas and taxes. That's it. You know, we sit up here, and thank God we live up here. The States is great. But, man, you guys are entertaining. just stay safe, all right? Just stay safe.
It's, well, you know, we want, that reminds me, before we do anything, I just want to say something here on the show. This is up here in Canada. I don't believe the U.S. shares this this holiday week with us, but this is actually National
Yes, they do.
Trucking
of course they
week.
Do. They have Labor Day the same way we do.
Well, no, this is National Trucking Week up in Canada.
Oh, National Trucking Week, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, and
this is when this is when every driver drives by and says, "Hey."
I just want to thank all the ladies and gentlemen out there who are professional drivers who are keeping supply chains moving. I know that people don't appreciate you for everything that you bring the public, but damn it, you do a great job. And thank you. You know, you guys are just unbelievable. And we should really have more than 1 week to celebrate what they do for us.
I think also down the States as well. I mean, you know, Rico, as I said a long time ago, I think, you know, the frontline workers, I consider truckers, the brothers and sisters who drive, as important as the frontline medical staff. Because God willing, we all won't get... God willing, we don't all get sick, but we all do need to eat.
Yes. And you know what? The all those things that those frontline medical workers need, their gloves and other personal protection equipment.
And whiskey and
the
bourbon
machines.
And all of that stuff.
Yeah. Everything. You know, it all comes in trucks and as well as the food. And, you know, if the truck drivers of North America ever stop doing what they do, this continent would come to a grinding halt because the rail cannot handle anymore. Obviously, the yards, the shipyards can't unload any quicker than they're unloading, which is pretty darn slow according to everything I'm reading. And that's why there's such a shortage of things right now. So hats off to the ladies and gentlemen out there that risk their lives every day to deliver the goods for our nations. We should really, more than 1 week should be given to them.
And risking their health in this pandemic.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing, too. Michael, let's get down to some business here. What do you see is going on with this economy the way... things are going right now because nothing makes any sense. There's a shortage of cars, a shortage of trucks, a shortage of parts, a shortage of everything. And I do have to say something just to, before we go on, just how crazy things are. my wife leased a car, and they put the ownership of the car in the wrong name, and our insurance company couldn't insure it, and they said, you've got to change this. And it was their mistake, not hers. And she called the dealer and said, listen, you guys made a mistake. You have to change this. And they said, well, we're not changing anything. You go to the Department of Transport, the Ministry of Transport, and you get it changed. And my wife said, no, it's not my mistake, and I'm not standing in line for 2 hours. You made the mistake, and if you don't like it, come and pick the car up. And you know what? They came and picked the car up. She took her license plate off, and which I'd never heard of, and it just shows you how crazy things are, because I'm sure they had 4 other people that wanted that new car.
Yeah.
Tells you how insane things are right now.
Yeah, and it's going to get worse. It's going to get worse, unfortunately. There's the economy, and then there's supply chain. And unfortunately now, the pandemic is now biting in harder, not just in the United States, but in Europe as well as in Asia, too. It's biting in harder. And as economies now begin to close down because they're just going to have to restrict movement, it's going to get even harder. And that, of course, by the way, and that's the inflationary cycle whereby people anticipating things aren't going to be available are going to go out and buy things faster.
Right. Just like we did.
So that's just
going to
expedite things.
Okay. So if you remember at the beginning of this pandemic, there were massive runs on staples,
toilet paper and paper towels.
Yeah, yep. And then everything like pasta, and it looked like a Russian grocery store back, when Gorbachev was in power or before.
Yeah.
So do you see now inflation is here? There's no two doubts about it. Do you see us having hyperinflation?
Well, no, we're not going to get hyperinflation is when you start approaching three-digit inflation. But even right now, I think even a 10% inflationary cycle is a very heavy cycle for the U.S. economy and for the developed world. Even 10% is very – remember, we've had like nothing more than 2% inflation for the past, 10, 15 years. So 10% is five times the going rate. Now, what everybody's watching, though, and I think you guys are sort of leading the way. When you look at the cost of a mile, what you're charging for a mile, let's say 2 years ago, a year ago, and now, it's all that, in terms of a manufacturing plant, and I can tell you that for a fact because I know it. So when you're a manufacturing company, transportation is somewhere between 2.5% and 5% of gross annual revenue. So it hits the bottom line real fast.
Sure.
And if it persists at that level, then they have no choice but to pass on the costs. Then as they pass on the cost, now the inflation prices, normally they can adjust the prices. Now the real question becomes is wages. Once it starts hitting wages, there's no way to roll wages back when the pandemic is over.
Right.
You can't give somebody a $5 an hour increase and then say when the pandemic's over, I'm taking $4 back. So once that starts getting into the wage cycle, then inflation starts to move very rapidly. And it's already happening. I mean, it really is happening. Somebody got paid X dollars an hour 3 years ago is now getting 20% more. Why? Because they don't want to come to work, right? But then I think, Rico, in your end of the world, all the benefits just came to an end. Rico?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Rico, are you there?
I'm here now.
I was saying in your neck of the wood, the benefits just ended.
Yeah, the unemployment things and the evictions are getting ready to start rolling out, and the unemployment situation definitely has ended. I think they were talking about trying to do something else again, but the freebies have come to a screeching halt.
Yeah.
So is that going to cause Michael? Is this going to cause a whole bunch of people to stampede back into the workforce?
Well, there's the catch. So it's actually, unfortunately, all of this is really a perfect storm. So You have the eviction moratorium ending. You have the supplemental unemployment benefits ending, state unemployment benefits ending. Then you have a rapid increase in COVID at the same time. So now in the States, it's now a perfect storm, which is even if you wanted to bring them back, you might be facing lockdowns again. But even if you didn't have the lockdowns, the other question becomes is people are getting sick at such an alarming rate. And by the way, you could see that because the numbers came off of air travel, and air travel was during the Labor Day was back at 2019 levels, but already it's dropped off dramatically because already they're waiting, and unfortunately, I hate to say this, in the next 2 weeks, all of the wonderful events have been going on for a month are about to hit the hospital hard. So I'm watching the U.S. Open, and everybody's sitting next to each other without a mask. I'm watching the football games down there, and everybody's without a mask, and they got 100,000 people. I'm going like, okay, this isn't going to go well. And then, of course, you already have a raging pandemic in numerous states. So I think it doesn't – and that's why even today, by the way, some of the investment firms, the big guys, scaled back their growth aspirations. So I think, you know, in the next 3 or 4 months, as the numbers come out, and you already saw the unemployment figures came out of 235,000, they were anticipating close to 700,000.
So the government's going to have to start with the programs all over again.
Well, I hate to say this, but there's another lovely little how can I put it? A lovely little disagreement on the horizon that is going to come due in exactly 22 days.
And share that
so
with
22
us.
Days. Well, in 22 days, they need to have an agreement to increase the debt ceiling and to continue funding the government. And we know how the Republicans and Democrats get along so well, they just can't wait to go to dinner with each other carrying guns. So, you know, and already I'm hearing on the news that, you know, Republicans are saying, well, the Democrats aren't talking to us. And the Democrats are saying, well, we're sort of busy right now with the $3.5 trillion reconciliation budget. They still haven't passed the 1.2 one yet either, but they're already busy with $3.5 trillion, and then they still have to negotiate a lifting or removing of the debt ceiling. And if they don't do that, then literally the U.S. government will have another 2 weeks of cash left over that, and then they have to start furloughing all the federal employees.
Yeah, but that never lasts. You know what? We've seen this sort of these antics before, and at the end of the day,
well, yeah, Donald Trump.
Nobody,
Donald Trump, he furloughed everybody,
right, for a little while, but he brought everybody back, did he not?
Well, they'll bring them back. The problem is not where they bring them back, but there's already. So when you're talking about supply chain and construction and constriction and all that, this creates an even bigger block. So you already have blockages. You already have supply chain problems. The government shutting down just makes it even worse.
Right, because now all of a sudden your federal customs employees, they're not working.
There you go, border agents. There you go.
Yeah. So they really
health inspectors. Yeah, all of them.
They really can't do anything to stop that. They've got to allow it to go through, I would think, because the United States can't afford to miss a beat right now, I would think. Am I not correct in that?
Just ask Rico. Rico's the American. Rico, what do you think?
Well, things have actually, they have been doing fairly well comparatively down here. The economy is not as stagnant as people believed it was going to be, but I think that this thing is held together by just threads right now, because you know you get some of the stuff, you know, you get, like you said, you get one water log over here and you get another one over there, and then you got, then it dams up the whole process, and then you really then you really got some problems, you got major problems that you might be staring down the pipe yet.
Yeah, and then becomes, we don't yet know the effect of all the unemployment benefits ending. So even if they wanted to extend it, it doesn't get done in 24 hours. It's going to be easily 2 to 4 weeks to pass a budget reconciliation in order to continue funding the unemployment benefits, again, assuming they get the votes they need in the House. But the question that becomes is, you take the eviction moratorium, you take the loss of benefits at the same time, and you're going, how is this going to help out? Well, I don't see it helping too good.
Right.
Because I think there's like 7 million people right now who are going to lose their unemployment benefits.
And there are, well, as long as, I guess it really depends on, if as long as there are no lockdowns, there would be work for those 7 million people, would there not, or most of them, I would think, to go back to doing what they were doing.
The majority of the jobs were in the service sector, not the manufacturing sector.
Okay.
And then, of course, then you take the car companies who are shutting down lines.
Right, because they can't get the raw materials.
That's correct, especially the chips.
Yep. Yeah, so, I just heard that there were a couple of plants up here in Canada that were going to be shutting down because of the lack of chips. I think it was GM.
GM, they shut down 8 plants across North America, including Canada.
Yeah, so it's a huge, huge issue that's not going away. So what's, Mike, if you had a crystal ball, and I know you don't have a crystal ball, but somehow you call things the way you see them, and you've got great sources for intel. What do you think is going, what's the world going to look like 12 months from now, given, I know you can't foresee anything with this, with this pandemic, because it doesn't look like it's going away too quickly anytime soon. What do you see? What would you,
if I was a betting man right now, I'd be drinking heavily and trying to figure it out. There isn't enough metaphors to try and describe what's going on. I think when you look out 12 months, I think the very, very first thing that everybody should do is protect themselves health-wise. Because, I was just talking to somebody who's very knowledgeable in the American healthcare system. And one of the things that was fascinating to me was, as a Canadian, if I get COVID, everything is covered. I go into a hospital, it's all taken care of.
Right.
As an American, I either have no money and I'm intransigent, in which case it's a charity case to the hospital. Or I have insurance, but I have a copay. And I said to him, I said, well, yeah, but I mean, who's covering the copay? Oh, he said, the person is. And I said, but that could be like, their 20% could be $100,000 or $200,000. Where do they get the money? He says, oh, no, then they take away your house. So, Rico, maybe you could tell us more as to how are your friends or anybody that you know, how are they dealing with the medical cost personally? Because that I'm fascinated to know.
Well, some of the stuff that you're saying that the insurance companies have begun to, if you haven't been vaccinated, that they have started increasing the cost for some of the different things when it comes to COVID-related treatment. And
that makes sense, actually.
And some of the other things, you're hearing a lot of people that are saying that if they had to go to the hospital, how quickly the hospital bill can start to compound on you and get out of hand.
Right.
So how does the copay system work?
It depends on what your maximum out of pocket for the year and the policy limits are. So most people have $1 million annual, $1 million policy with their company.
Okay, so when it comes to the brothers and sisters who are drivers who are independent, do they have health insurance?
Say that again.
So the independent truckers. The ones who are not affiliated with a carrier. In other words, do they have medical insurance?
Yes. They should have. If they don't have insurance coverage through a spouse, then they probably have it through through Obamacare because you had to have insurance coverage mandatory, or you had to pay that penalty now, I think.
Okay. And so through Obamacare, now is Obamacare, and I followed it, but I don't understand as well as you do, does that cover 100% of the cost, or is it just like a percentage of the cost?
It works just like any other major medical. You'll have a deductible that needs to be met, and it'll kick in at a certain point.
Okay. So right now, are there any statistics on how many truck drivers have become ill from COVID?
I'm pretty sure that there probably are some statistics out there. I'm not privy to them, but I'm pretty sure that there definitely probably are some statistics out there. But I know, at least for myself, I've been very fortunate. But I try to take countermeasures into place whenever I'm out and about. Just like I went to a game this the past weekend, but I was masked up the whole time, double masked up the entire time I was out there.
Good.
Now, were most of the people masked in that stadium, Rico?
No.
You had a good bit that were, but the majority of them that were sitting in the stand because it was an outside game, they were not.
Okay. But you're sitting right next to somebody.
Yep. You're close enough to be kissing cousins.
Yeah. There wasn't once you were outside in the stands, there wasn't no social distance going on.
Right.
I know up here, with any sporting event, they've got, just like at the Olympics, they've got blocks, and you could sit with your husband or wife, but you can't sit next to strangers, and they've got, seats blocked off and rows blocked off, and that's where, that's where these stadiums are probably losing a fortune, same as the movie theaters and any other entertainment that's going on. What does concern me, I get messages every day from different trade shows and conventions that are going forward. They're like NASA, for example, in Nashville. They're holding a convention the beginning of November, and I'd love to go, but I'm apprehensive, to be honest.
No, they're gonna be crazy enough to cancel.
Now I was talking to the people from the Louisville Truck Show and from Matt, and they're planning, because I wanted to get them on the show. They do a great job. They probably do a better job than anybody at truck shows. And I was talking to Toby, the general manager. They have all plans to launch it again this coming March. Even March, I'm starting to wonder whether this thing is going to be over by then. I kind of doubt it. The way things are going.
I always saw this as at least a two-year, and the person I was just with is an expert, and we both agreed. Unfortunately, we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 years before we get to maybe 60-70% of pre-pandemic mobility.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's I always said to you, the economy is like a big train, right? A recession is when the train slows down. A depression is when the train rolls backwards. Well, the train is derailed.
Right.
So yeah. you're not gonna get the train back on the rails that easily.
But let me ask you, Mike. There's the numbers you'll know better than me, but I heard that there is $7 trillion in the United States sitting in people's savings accounts that haven't been able to spend the money they've made from their investments and everything else, or even from working and not being able to go out. Where does that play in? Because you've got a pent up demand. I realize some things, like people aren't going to be able to take cruises and go to Bahamas and places like that, or maybe even Florida. But how does that pan out? You've got this pent up demand. People have the money. They obviously want to buy things because Amazon is going crazy trying to fulfill orders. as is every other mail order or email host in the continent. So how does that all play out, Michael?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, but when you break down consumption, right, you break down your consumption. First off, even if you had $1 billion, there's only so much you can eat.
Right.
Right? So then, and this is where, you know, even if you were to go out a lot, there's only so much you can spend. So it now leads to, you now have all this excess, now both investment cash and excess cash and all that. Now when you're watching housing prices, and Rico, I don't know how your housing prices are going down there, but housing prices are climbing rapidly. Now, here's where this really gets interesting, is that cash in essence now really means very little. In other words, the value of the dollar, that even BlackRock, the biggest fund in the world, has announced that it's going to start buying private homes. And they're going to start renting it out. Because there's just so much cash, they don't really know what to do with it.
Right.
So
your dollar today is worth 95 cents in 6 months, correct?
Well, that's the definition of inflation, which means it buys 95 cents worth of goods.
Right.
Right, and then it buys 90 cents worth of goods. So now all of a sudden you need $1.20 to buy 90 cents, to buy a dollar's worth. But that's
right.
No problem, because either the government sent it to you or cryptocurrency invented out of thin air. Right? you know, so, I mean, the biggest industry right now is private yachts and private jets. So what's going to happen is that it speeds inflation up, because as the bottleneck continues and more people have cash in there. Now, the question is, with the moratorium gone, people will actually have to make their back rent, and let's hope they have the money. So, you know, that's why I said a long time ago, be careful with your money, because sooner or later we have to pay those bills. And so we don't really know how much of that $7 trillion has already been pledged, meaning it's car payments that were deferred, it's credit card bills that were deferred, it's rent that was deferred, it's mortgages that were deferred. We don't know how much of that has been deferred payments that now have to come due. Then if the unemployment benefits are at the same time, then that cash reserve gets depleted fast.
Right. So if half of it, let me ask you something though. If half of it gets paid back because it's back rent and interest and a whole bunch of other things, and you still have $3.5 trillion sitting there burning a hole in people's pockets that they want to go out and buy that new car or whatever that they can't buy because not everybody wants or needs or can afford a private jet or a yacht.
Right.
So what's that going to, you know, there's still $3.5 trillion.
But again, that's assuming
the
that they, but that, right, I agree. But the question is whether they have an income to replace it. So I may have, you know, $1 million in the bank, but if I don't have any income, I'm just using $1 million to live.
Right. Yeah.
So
which
this is
really,
where now, sorry, Rico?
Yeah. That's Chuck.
No, I didn't say
which
anything.
Is really $900,000 next year.
Right. So, you know, as I said, there's my background's economics, and I can tell you this was not in my economics courses when I was doing my degree in economics. There was no place where it was $30 trillion of debt and people were getting, you know, $2,000 a month in the mail. That wasn't covered in my economics class. It was covered in Russia, but it wasn't covered in the United States or North America.
Yeah, how'd that work out for the Russians?
You know, and then comes the political hit of who wants to take the punch bowl away.
Yeah, that's the other side of it.
Right. So, I mean, Rico, you're down in Georgia, right?
Correct.
And you guys are here having a lovely time with your own issues down there. How's the Georgia economy been doing in the last, let's say, 2 or 3 months or 4 months?
Oh,
because I know you guys have a very big COVID problem now.
Yeah, it's bustling right along, though. The economy, the governor is not shutting down anything. He not shutting anything down. They're fighting. they have big fights right now with this whole school and wearing masks in school and all that stuff. But like you're saying, the housing crisis and all this stuff is all, it's especially down here, it's crazy. You got bidding wars, $30,000, $40,000, $60,000 over asking price.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We're used to that up here in Canada. Now, what I've got to ask you something, Rico. Down in Georgia, what's it like for those that don't own a home if they want to rent an apartment? Is there apartments available for them, or is there an abundance of apartments? What's going on with rentals?
Say it again, Chuck.
What's going on in the rental housing market? Is there an abundance of apartments available for people that want to rent, or is there a shortage?
No, they're building like crazy down here. Right now, I think that it just depends on what part of town you want to be in.
Right.
That's kind of the whole thing right there. Depending on which side of town, and on the swankier parts of town, it might be a little bit less availability. But there's stuff that's out there. You just have to move quickly. But you might not get exactly what you want. But there's availability out there.
Because what happened in the Toronto area was when the pandemic hit and people realized they could work remotely, there were droves of people that moved out of the Toronto area and moved to smaller communities, you know, as far as 100 miles, 150 miles outside Toronto, because they could work remotely and they didn't have to pay the high rent. And then on top of that, we had a huge influx of condominium developers come into the Toronto area in the last 25 years or so, and they built millions, or I shouldn't say millions, but tens of thousands of condominiums, and they were bought up, a lot of them by Airbnb people, and a lot of them by foreign investors, and that certainly created more supply than demand when the pandemic hit. Prior to that, there was a real tight market. But now there's an abundance of apartments. So rents have come way down in the Toronto area for apartments anyways. Houses are a little different because of the cost of, you know, our housing costs in the Toronto area are insane. A tiny, tiny 1,200-square-foot house in a not desirable area of Toronto is $1 million. And that's not a desirable area. If you go into a desirable area, same size house, it could be double or triple that. So it's, you know, it's totally insane.
But I think in terms of the supply, though.
Right.
No, I mean, I think, you know, in terms of trucking and everything else and transportation, you guys are facing your own challenges, right? I mean, less and less drivers. Are new drivers coming into the industry?
Not
like at a rate enough to replace who's leaving?
No, that's.
I gotta step away for a second, gentlemen. I'll be right back. I gotta step away for a second.
Go ahead, Mike. That's one of the voids in our particular industry. We have the attrition rate is just insane. We have baby boomers that are aging out and they don't want to do this work anymore. And especially with a fourth wave of this virus, you know, these people have worked their whole lives and they may not have worked in trucking their whole lives. Some have, and some came in as a second or third career, maybe after a lengthy military career or office career, whatever. And worked their remaining years, but now all of a sudden they're between 60 and 70 years old, and they're going, you know what, this isn't the life that I thought it would be, or it's not the life that it used to be, or it's not the life I want anymore. You know what, I want to go and spend the rest of my days my healthy days with my wife and my children or my grandchildren. And I've had it. And they're packing it in droves.
And that's going to increase prices even further.
Well, yeah, we've had a, on top of that, when this virus hit, in March 2020, there were a whole whack of training schools on both sides of the border that stopped operating for a while. So they couldn't even train new truck drivers.
And now you get what I'm saying. This is why you're looking at 4 or 5 years before you get back to even 70% of where you were before the pandemic in terms of the mobility, meaning, you know, just about every industry reopening. So when I look at that in terms of, especially in transportation, and you know, CN tried to take over a U.S. railroad that's been blocked by regulators. So I don't think that's going to add any capacity. I mean, a rail is a rail. You buying another rail
doesn't add any rail at all. Michael, it doesn't matter who owns it. It's still a rail, and they're not going to put any more tracks down.
Yeah. Right. I mean, this is, and then, of course, you know, what really is at the heart of it all is the environmentalist movement of the past 30 years. So they wanted no expansion of any kind. So ironically enough, if you look back at the whole thing, one of the biggest constraints of the rail is the oil industry. And that's because as pipelines were blocked from being built, oil just went over the rail.
Yeah.
So exactly. 20 or 30 years ago, there may have been like 5,000 barrels of oil going by rail. It's up at 500,000 barrels a day.
It's insane. And it actually, it just adds to the greenhouse footprint when you look at it by having these trains loaded with oil. And it's a hell of a lot more dangerous than it is on a pipeline.
Yep.
Pipelines are pretty safe compared to rail. When you have a train, like, if nothing happens, trains are great. And there's a great...
Yeah, but the environmentalists will tell you, but we have a bike lane. What do you have? I love environmentalists. They travel by bike to their office, and they usually live in San Diego. They don't live in New York or Toronto. Right? I mean, I'll go environmentalist as soon as I see every politician riding a bike in February. Ride your bike to work every day for a month and a half, you get my vote for environmentalism. And I do believe the environment is an issue, but I mean, you're not going to be able to stop the world from turning.
No.
But that's really the issue. They'd like to be able to stop the world from turning. So I think, if you're a trucker today and you're 45, man, you hit the jackpot. Your career is going to be fine. You're going to do a great living, and you'll always be in demand. Because one thing I know for sure, no robot is going to drive a 75,000-pound truck.
No, that's never. You know what? They will in a control. And I've been saying this all along. We will have
a controlled environment in short haul. Right, yes, now. But that's it.
Well, like in a controlled environment, like a shipyard or rail yard and things like that, yes. But there is no way anybody's going to drive, take a 53-foot trailer
get out of the tractor
at the start of Interstate 80, and driver gets out of the tractor and the thing drives by itself to San Francisco. From New York. None of that stuff is ever happening. There will be some sort of an operator. Now, the one thing, though, and maybe you can see the benefit of this, the trucks are becoming more and more autonomous in the way that, you know, we have collision avoidance, rollover avoidance, we have automated or automatic transmission, power steer, all sorts of wonderful things. And it doesn't, some of these trucks, it doesn't take the skill set to drive them that it does a truck without all these things, because and they're just getting better and better as long as everything works. You know, we have all these sensors telling us there's a car beside us, there's a car behind us, there's a car in front of us. That's great as long as it's working. But the second it fails, then you got to go back to old school basics of looking in your mirrors.
Right, but interestingly enough, what you said, though, the transformation, the biggest transformation in the trucking industry will be going automatic. Because then your ability to train drivers is going to be faster. You'll be able to move them faster through the queue because now they can. And I think that's the part where, you know, ironically enough, if I was doing the marketing for the Trucking Association, that's what I would promote because they're expecting the truck to be lined with the electronics. That's fine. But the image of persons driving a truck is that it's a 15-gear manual. And it's, you know, and for today's young people, they don't want anything complicated. So if you have a commercial saying it's an automatic with all the bells and whistles of electronics, I'll make you a bet you'll get a lot of them lined up.
Well, yes or no. See, here's there's a bunch of issues here on that one. More and more, I think all the big carriers are going with automated transmissions for 100 reasons. Even people, God bless them, coming out of the military in both the United States and Canada are not learning to drive manual transmissions in the military. There are very few cars and even small pickup trucks built today that have manual transmissions. So where is a kid at 16 years old, unless he or she grows up on a farm around heavy equipment or has a father or grandfather that likes old stuff, these kids never get the opportunity to practice on a manual transmission. And then they get a little bit older, and maybe they go into the military or they go into the workforce. So they've never,
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
So, you know, that creates, that just creates a different, different type of driver, number one. Two, what we are talking about doing now is, which might be a help, is allowing 18-year-olds to cross state lines. Now, right now, the truth of the matter is, because there is such a, just such an insurance crunch for truckers in the U.S., there are 18-year-olds that are driving trucks, but the truth of the matter is they're driving the family farm's tractor trailer loaded with, oats or grain or something like that from the farm to the feed mill. They're not driving, even from the very few of them, although they're legally entitled to, are driving from the bottom end of Illinois to the top end and delivering in Chicago. There are, like, hardly any doing that because nobody will insure them. Now, part of the issue has been why we have this driver shortage is as the family farm seems to have evaporated. We don't have farm kids to learn to drive trucks, and they're always the best. They're just good at what they do. So we've lost out on that. And now that you have to be, 21, but really it's 23 or 25 to drive a truck, you don't get that opportunity in a lot of cases. Once somebody finishes high school, if they don't want to go to post-secondary education, what will happen is they pick another career. They go into, they become a mechanic or they become they go into house building or plumbing or electrician. And by the time they're 21 or 23 or 25, they've already got their papers for something else, and they've got a job, and they probably have some money saved up, and they have some responsibility. And they're not interested in driving a truck because it's not the lifestyle that it used to be. So that's where we're we're facing a nasty wall. But on the other hand, it's created a shortage of truck drivers. And that shortage of truck drivers is why we have, or one of the reasons we have such insane freight rates, as Rico alluded to at the beginning of this conversation tonight when he was doing the weekly DAT report. You know, we never saw freight rates like this, since deregulation.
Yeah, no, I think that's the greatest, where people learned to drive standard was on the, back in the 60s and 70s. But all that's gone.
Yeah. Right.
All that's gone. So all that is now gone, which kind of explains why they can't drive standard.
Yeah, where are they going to learn?
Exactly. So in the military, they no longer do it. So this is true. I didn't consider that part, right? I didn't consider that part. And I think that's going to have a big, big impact. The more they go automatic, the better it's going
to
be.
I think we have to really, I think that the only way we're going to get people in is certainly to see if we can train the younger ones, the ones that are 18 or 19. And I think we really need to make trucks a lot sexier for them. They don't want to sleep in trucks for, they're not going to do it for very long. So I think that whole thing is broken. I say that all the time on this show, where we send drivers out and we send them out and we expect them to stay out all week. And sometimes in case of the large carriers, they send them out for 3 weeks. Now, I was on a radio show a couple weeks ago, and I brought this up, and one of the other guests, Brett Hutto, who's with Internet Truck Stop, he said that one of the issues that we have with not running long distances, so much of the freight that we move today is on what we call triangles. So somebody goes from like Toronto to Vancouver to Los Angeles and Los Angeles back home. But I just think we're going to have to look at it differently if we're going to attract truck drivers, because everybody wants to be sleeping in their own bed every night.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of changes that are going to be happening in the system. But I think you're absolutely right. The more electronic it becomes, which is attractive to today's generation, the more easier it becomes to drive with automatic, the more drivers you'll get. The other part, as I said for a long time, you'll get more drivers when there's a downturn in construction.
Good point.
That's what they're going to come from.
And when do you see that, Mike?
I think we're getting there.
Sometimes the price didn't stop anything.
Well, no, but the government. But this is where this gets to the heart of the matter, which is how much longer can the government maintain zero interest rates?
Ah, I agree. So, tell me something. As an economist, is there not a correlation between inflation and increases in interest?
No, the other way around. The lower the interest rates goes, the more liquidity you create. The more liquidity you create, the more demand you create. The more demand you create, the higher the prices go. So when you increase interest rates, you're removing liquidity from the system.
Right.
If you remove liquidity from the system, less people can afford the house. If less people can afford the house, less people are required to build the house, and that's when you're going to start getting an uptick in drivers. Because right now, that guy can make money as a construction person, very good money, but still live at home.
Right.
But when that construction job is gone, and there doesn't seem to be another one on the horizon, he looks at his skill set and he looks at his education or her education level and says, where can I make a similar amount of money? Trucking. Because there's not going to be any, there's no manufacturing jobs for them to go to anymore. They're going to earn $60,000, $70,000 a year.
Right. Yeah.
That's really the heart of it. So, you know, when you're looking at the, and I think like in the United States, Powell is now, I mean, they're having conversations about when to have conversations about removing some of the stimulus. But and they're only talking about the stimulus that started since COVID. They're not even talking about the stimulus that started back in 2008, which is still in the system. So if you look at housing prices since 2011, they've gone straight up.
Oh, my God.
That's because they flood. Yeah. Well, because once they started lowering the rates and flooding the system full of cash. So if you're wondering where's your drivers, they're building houses.
Good point. And, you know, I forgot about that because I remember that years ago we always got guys that worked on summer construction projects and weren't working in the winter, which we don't get those type of drivers anymore. We're different. We're a different company now, obviously.
And manufacturing was offshore.
Yep. So,
yeah, manufacturing was offshore.
If you had to guess, if you were a betting man, when would you think that interest rates would start to raise?
I no longer think it's a question of when they raise interest rates. I think now the real issue is when will they stop doing the bond buying? So, you know, the average person is wondering, what am I talking about? Well, in essence, the interest rates are dirt low because the Federal Reserve has been buying all the corporate and government debt for the last 12 years. And that's right. Driven rates lower, lower, lower. So at a certain point, when they turn around and say, okay, we're going to start reducing the amount of buying we're going to do, rates will begin to rise anyway. So it's not as if they have to increase the rates. The rates will begin to rise the moment they stop buying, not stop, but even if they stop, if they start stopping buying a certain amount of debt, rates will begin to rise. So the 10-year now is at 1.35% on the 10-year. But if you think about it, you can get mortgage rates for like 2%. Effectively, in other words, and this is the crazy part, banks are losing money on every mortgage. Because if inflation is running at 5%, the banks can only charge 2, they're losing money.
Right.
So
where they
now make? It's the – well, now they're going to make it from fees and from trading and everything else.
Okay.
But
right.
now they have a real problem because they don't like losing money for a long time. So now you have an imbalance. So, you know, it takes a long time for this to weed into the system. But my concern is there's no way for them to reduce all this without causing really, really big pain to the first-time homeowners. The guy who owns his house outright, he's fine. If there's a decrease in the value of the house, his mortgage is mostly paid off. The people who are going to get
right.
hurt the most are the people who just got into their first home, who overpaid
right.
for the house and are probably leveraged to the hilt.
Right, and they bought
a house.
They're going to
get whacked pretty bad.
They bought a house for $500,000. If there's any change in the market and it goes down to $3,000, but they owe $450,000 on it, they're screwed.
Well, and then there's the job, right? So remember, they still need to have the income in order to make the payments.
Right.
So this is a real logjam. And I think the tools that all the central bankers have, they have no more tools to keep rates at this level. They've run out of tools. They can't gin up the system much more to keep rates going down, or to keep them at this level. They've run out of room. They can go negative, but that makes no sense at all. You can't do that for a very long time. So I think, you know, for the trucking industry, you'll have a good period of time where you'll have a balance, because as less construction workers are needed, they'll move into the trucking industry, which will begin to equalize things for a while. Now, the good news is the people who come into the trucking industry are not likely going to go back into construction afterwards. Many of them will stay in the trucking industry.
Because it's steady. But construction
Trucking industry is a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, trucking industry is a lifestyle.
Well, and that's something we've got to get around, because the lifestyle is not appealing to a lot of people. And that's what
and
hence,
you make a very good point.
The,
yeah, I mean, but the interesting, if you guys want to know the difference, then take a look at some of the hotels they do in Tokyo. So if the truck stops became like those hotels in Tokyo for business owners, I don't know if you ever saw this, but these were basically tubular beds that business owners, rather than travel outside the core of Tokyo, which would take them 2 hours each way, they would rent these beds for the night. But these beds were literally in tubes. And they would go in, they would have the TV, and everything was there, and they could sleep there. So when you look at the future of truck stops, if you change the future of truck stops, you would have a very positive impact on trucking. If they suddenly saw the truck stop as a place to hang out and do their internet, and it's almost like a quasi-cafe,
I'm looking at the time, and I don't let it get away from us. We got about 1 minute left in the show. Mike, you want to let people know how they can get in contact with you?
I'm happy to answer your questions. My email address, my general email address, is michael.lampel@gmail.com. I'll be happy to answer your questions. But if I'll repeat it. If you guys were to look at the truck stops, that would give a big change of perception of trucking.
I think people want to stay home.
No, they don't. But they don't want to sleep like dogs either.
Exactly. Good point. more for the next time you come on, Mike. We're going to talk about this next time, and I hope it's soon. Thank you so much for joining us. If anybody
always
wants
a pleasure.
To get
glad,
to me,
I'm glad I didn't insult anybody tonight.
I hope not. Rico's still putting out fires from a few months ago.
No.
If anybody wants to get a hold of me, give me a call. Extension 203. Phone number is 800-388-4352. Again, extension 203. Or send me an email just at traffix.com. It puts your email on your email to put your phone number. Sometimes it's easier for me just to call you, and I'll help you with whatever problem you're having. Rico, you want to back this thing back in the hole?
Absolutely. Once again, I want to thank Mike Lampel for taking time out to join us this evening. Definitely gracious, thankful for him being so gracious with his time. But most of all, we want to thank you guys, the listeners, that took time out to listen to either download or listen to us live. You could have been anywhere else in the world. It could have been doing anything else in the world. But you took a little time to hang out with us, and we are always eternally grateful that you did so. So with that being said, we want to welcome you to come back and join us next week, same time, same place. And we'll talk at you same time, same place. Stay safe out there, everybody. Stay healthy. Keep it in between the mustard and the mayonnaise, and we'll talk at you next time. Good night. God bless.
Catch you on the flip-flop.
All the best.